Now, we have just seen that a church is to publicly rebuke, so that all may fear, a sinning elder. And this is to be done without bias, and it is to be done without any preferential treatment, because God is watching. Christ is watching. The elect angels are watching. And they are viewing us as the heavenly court as we handle sin within the local church. I want to add one more point, which I was not able to conclude in the last video that we did. And it's point number four: judge sin and do not fear the consequences. Despite this forceful, dramatic introduction that Paul gives, in the presence of God, in the presence of Christ, in the presence of the angels, all watching our behavior, as a result of the proliferation of lawsuits, churches now are disciplining their leaders when they fall into sin, particularly if it's sexual sin or financial sin or something that can cause a lawsuit. Now, there's really something very hypocritical about this. When we were not faced with lawsuits, it was almost unheard of to discipline a church leader publicly and to censor such a leader. But now that we have this lawsuit problem hanging overhead, all of a sudden we're very righteous and we are very careful of who we discipline. In fact, if you discipline someone today, you can be pretty sure you're going to face a lawsuit. And that's why churches are taking good action. And this is a very, very good thing. How sad, though, it wasn't the fear of God. It wasn't obedience to the word of God or love for God that we did this. We were forced into it by society allowing us to be sued. It would have been much better if we had been practicing this for years, because we know it's God's way and it's best for the church. Let me illustrate this. One of the popes said that Ireland was one of the most Catholic countries in the world, and their churches were at one time filled, and priests were very honored people. But as a result of the continuous scandals and the sexual abuse of children and the cover-up of these sins, and the shipping off of priests to another church, has caused a terrible reaction in Ireland. And today the churches are nearly empty. And just recently, Ireland voted overwhelmingly to accept same-sex marriages against the wishes of the Roman Catholic Church. Now, my dear friends, I am not here to just criticize the Roman Catholic Church. We Protestants have done the exact same thing. I have seen it with my own eyes. I've seen churches in our own city ship off sexual abusive pastors to another church, and nothing is said. The point is this: the Bible tells us not to hide the sin of our leaders. And if we hide the sin of our leaders and we just move them on to another church, or we just help them on through some therapy and get them moving back into the ministry again, we are actually causing far greater damage. We are disgracing the Church of Jesus Christ. We are disgracing all other ministers, all other elders, when we do this kind of thing. The world needs to see that we take sin seriously, and the sins of our leaders we take very seriously, and we don't cover them up, we don't hide them, we don't come up with excuses, we do what God says. Of course, we do it with grace and love and wisdom and humility, but sin is exposed publicly. Paul says, keep these rules. Let us keep these rules, as the apostle says, as God is watching, Christ is watching, the angels are watching. Let's be serious about this and not just play church games. Now we want to look at our last section here, Roman numeral number four, assessing prospective elders. Investigating accusations of sin, publicly disciplining leaders, is emotionally frightening. You will not want to do this after you've done it once. But again, it's simple obedience to the word of the Lord. And we don't really have a choice. That's the way to look at this. We must obey the Lord. And if we obey the Lord, it will be the best for the church. It'll be the best for the offending member and for those who have been abused by such a person. Now, Paul starts here in verses 22 to 25 with some sound advice about how to avoid failure in appointing the wrong people and not having this kind of thing happen. The first thing he says, and this is sound advice, it's a cautionary note, do not be hasty in the laying on of hands, verse 22. Do not be hasty in the laying on of hands, nor take part in the sins of others. Keep yourself pure. Now, the laying on of hands is an ancient symbolic action. It's used for different reasons, but here it's used for appointment or commissioning someone to a special task. Perfect example of this is Acts 6:6, when the apostles say to the church in Jerusalem, pick 7 qualified men, we will lay our hands on them. Well, what they mean is we will appoint them to the task of charitable care of the widows and the poor. By the laying on of hands is expressed the transfer of authority, transfer of responsibility. It also symbolizes blessing. But in this case, it is the appointment to eldership. Now, the need for leaders is so great that very often we appoint the wrong people too quickly. We're in such desperate condition for leaders that we find someone who's willing to do something, we're willing to make them an elder without any investigation of what they believe or who they even are. Now, in the case here of Ephesus, with the discipline of certain elders, it may be a temptation now. We've lost elders. We've lost overseers. Let's appoint some other people quickly. Paul says, do not do it. Do not do this. In fact, if you will look at many leadership failures, it's because people who were not fit for office, they were unworthy, unsuitable for office, they did not meet the qualifications, were hastily appointed to eldership. Now, some people think that Paul is talking here about the restoration of the fallen elder. Now, it could apply to that, but I do not feel the flow of thought is teaching that. He is talking here about prospective elders in light of disciplining elders, removing elders. This can be very tiring, and you might want to say, boy, I don't even want to get involved in this kind of thing because of such failure. But he's going to say, it's not as difficult as you think. First thing is this, do not make a quick, hasty appointment of a person to the eldership. This is what I think he's talking about. Then the laying on of hands creates a bond between two parties. The laying on of hands creates a situation in which the ones who appoint share with, they participate in both the successes and failures of the people they appoint. In other words, there is a relationship created between those who appoint and those who are appointed. And so in this case, if they had hastily appointed someone to eldership and they fall into sin or they cause division or they cause problems, then those who appointed them without proper examination, they participate in the failure of this person and actually participate in the sin. So it's very, very serious and very important that we're prayerful about an appointment. We're thoughtful. We take reservation. We ask lots of questions. We take our time in this. Better not to appoint anyone to appoint the wrong person. Now, third, Paul's personal warning to Timothy. He says, keep yourself pure. Now, by this, he means take proactive stance. Examine the person. Do all you can to check the candidate for eldership. And that way you'll keep yourself pure, because if you appoint the wrong person, if you're hasty in doing this, it's going to taint your character. It's going to bring questions upon you, and people are going to say, how did you put this man in office? Look at what he's done. Look at the terrible things. Look at what he believes. How did this happen? And this happens a lot. I was talking to an elder one time, and he said to me, I don't believe in the bodily resurrection. I said, now, you are an elder in a church? He says, yes. I said, did anyone ever question your doctrine or test you or examine you? No, I just got a phone call one night and was asked to be an elder. We needed elders desperately. I said, you're basically a heretic, and you should go to the elders now. If you love the church, go and resign immediately, and then you better start studying this doctrine. If you love the church, that's what you should do. So Paul says, Timothy, keep yourself pure. Take time, examine the candidate, do everything on the human dimension to assess the person properly. Now, there's a short digression where he says to Timothy, no longer drink only water, but use a little wine for the sake of your stomach and your frequent ailments. Now, this idea of keep yourself pure from the sins of those you appoint makes Paul think, well, Timothy is not drinking wine. Why he abstains from wine, we don't know. It's only guesses to figure this out. But Paul says, now, you have some stomach problems, digestive problems, and you have this frequent ailment. A little wine, not a lot of wine, a little wine will help you. So it will not be a matter of purity if you have some wine. Now, what is beautiful here is that this, to me, affirms Paul's authorship, and it expresses the true nature of this letter. It's a real living letter. Timothy is a real person. Paul's a real person, and Paul wrote this letter. Yet many scholars deny that Paul wrote this. Well, if a person was faking this or forging Paul's name, he's not going to put in this kind of information. So this is sort of a footnote, sort of a parenthesis, but it comes back to the idea of keeping yourself pure by proper examination of all candidates for the pastoral leadership of the church. Then helps for assessing prospective elders. Well, since you could actually participate in their sins and be blamed for their sins because you appointed the wrong person, this is pretty frightening. Who wants to even get involved in this? So Paul gives them here two brief maxims to help Timothy, or after Timothy would leave, the elders. It's not that difficult. It's actually easier than you think if you will take the time to assess. And so he says this in verses 24 and 25. The sins of some people are conspicuous, going before them to judgment. But the sins of others appear later. So also, good works are conspicuous. And even those, the works or deeds, that are not, cannot remain hidden. The first category is obvious. The sins of some people are conspicuous, going before them to judgment. In other words, some people, their life, their behavior, their talk, it's so obvious they cannot ever qualify to be an elder. You don't need to worry about them. In fact, before you even assess them, you don't even need to assess them. It's so obvious to all. So just remove that category. It's not that difficult. Then he has a second category, the more difficult one, and the one he wants to emphasize, and it's this. The sins of others appear later. In other words, it's not on the surface. You are going to have to investigate more. You're going to have to ask questions. You're going to have to take more time. You're going to have to talk to other people. And eventually, their sins will appear as you investigate, assess the person's character. So that's the importance of not appointing someone hastily, because you will not have time to assess and examine the person's qualifications. And then there's a third category. And the third category, it's the second maxim, is this. So also good works are conspicuous, and even those that are not cannot remain hidden.